This is the Let's Get Real Estate Show with your host, Danielle Chason.
Full-time investor, strategic consultant, motivational coach, sought-after speaker,
and host of your number one real estate investing show, Let's Get Real Estate,
where real people are doing real estate.
Hey guys, Josh Finlay on the Let's Get Real Estate podcast with Danielle Chason. And today we're going to talk about some investing strategies, what's happening and what's working in today's market, what you can plan for tomorrow's market. We had a great time shooting today, and I really hope you guys enjoyed the show.
Hey everybody, it's Danielle Chason here, and we're back with the Let's Get Real Estate podcast. And this is where I bring to you real people doing real estate. And it doesn't get any more real than Josh Finlay's in the house. Woo woo. Hey Josh, how's it going?
Hey Danielle, thanks so much for having me on today.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm excited about having you on because the topic that we're going to talk about today is, I think, a really relevant one when it comes to people having to pivot in order to survive in business. And we really want to be able to look at what people are doing today now that there's been big environmental shifts in the market and investors have had to do big pivots. So I'm really excited about learning today what we're going to do as far as highlight or talk about your clients and what they're doing and learn from what other people are doing in order to survive. So before we do that though, Josh, how about you tell us a little bit about yourself and the Finlay Mortgage Group and everything that you guys do, because you guys are just smashing it in Kitchener and I'm just loving seeing what you guys are doing.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having us on. You know, we bumped into each other a handful of times at events. You know, it's a long time coming. I'm glad we could do this. If for anybody who doesn't know me, my name is Josh Finlay. I am one of the co-owners of the Finlay Mortgage team. We specifically were born out of the idea of helping investors. Before it became a trendy thing, my business partner and I, we dove into the world of investors before there were really anybody servicing them. So we decided, it's a long story, but we met this skinny guy with an orange beard. His name was Matt. If you guys have been around a little while, you would have known who this guy is. And we decided to shoot some YouTube videos when COVID happened. And that kind of started who we are and what we do. And so we've consistently been creating content around helping investors purchase, develop, scale. And we realize there's a massive need for investors to figure out different types of financing. And you know, as many of you who are listening to this podcast know, it's not an easy thing to purchase real estate, and it's not getting any easier in Canada to purchase real estate. So, you know, we found that, you know, there's a huge demand to help investors. And as we continue to go through this journey of wherever we're going on in this country, it's going to continue to get more difficult. So we decided to create a team of like-minded people. You know, all of my agents are investors themselves. I invest in multifamily real estate. So we fundamentally understand how to do this and do it ourselves. We just have an absolute blast helping people and navigating people through generating wealth and creating wealth in a time where, you know, it's becoming more difficult to do it. So, you know, that's a little bit about us, what we do. You know, I like to tell my clients we're trying to save the world one mortgage at a time, but we're making it happen.
That's going to be a tagline, saving the world one mortgage at a time. But you know what? Honestly, I mean, we laugh, but there's a lot to be said for people who can get mortgages and build real estate. I mean, there is a sense of security that comes with that. The banks look at you different. You're just, you know, when it comes to society, you're on another level, which is why I constantly want to get people into real estate, at least to get their primary mortgage and maybe one or two rental properties, right? And so I subscribe to that, saving the world one mortgage at a time.
Well, I think it comes down to the fundamental, just like, you know, net worth and having like some sort of like legs to stand on. And if anybody has been keeping track of just going to the grocery store or going to the pump, if you don't have any assets to hold on to, that gap is very quickly, you know, becoming larger. So, you know, helping people get into this asset class has never become more important. You know, back when I was a kid, my parents got a mortgage. Everybody got a mortgage. It was easy to get a mortgage. Houses just went up in value. But now it's almost a necessity to be able to survive in this economic climate. And I think that as Canadians start to continue to understand what's happening with the economy and how the system is maybe not on their side anymore, you know, getting into a mortgage and getting into real estate has never become more important.
Absolutely. And as time goes on, the income to mortgage gap just keeps widening and widening and making, to your point, making it harder for people to get a mortgage. So, you know, I'm a licensed realtor, and in the realtor world, there's a saying, and in the investor world, there's a saying, you know, when was the best time to buy real estate? Yesterday. When's the second best time to buy? Is today, which means don't wait, because it is getting harder and harder. And with every day that you don't own real estate, you're losing opportunity and you're not building your net worth. So anyway, we can talk about that all day, but that's not what we're here for today. So what I really want to talk about is an interesting thing that you and I talked about just before we jumped on and started recording, was how people are pivoting in order to survive. Now, a lot of investors, I don't want to say most, but there's a lot of investors who've gotten paralyzed in 2022 and said, I'm not doing anything right now. I'm going to wait and sit. I'm going to see what's happening. I don't know what direction to go in, or my strategy is no longer working. I am just going to wait until this corrects itself and then come back in. But the people that are experienced and knowledgeable pivot with the economy. And you're seeing that a lot with your clients. And I really am curious to see or to hear what changes you're seeing with your clients and what pivots they're making in order to keep moving forward. Because, you know, if you're not moving forward, you're dying, right?
I'm glad we chose this topic. I know when we were getting ready to shoot this podcast, you know, there's a lot of information out right now about, you know, the world essentially ending. You know, we're on the brink of World War III. We have interest rates. No one knows where they're going to go. You know, the economy isn't doing too hot right now. So, you know, we wanted to focus on something that would kind of enlighten everybody and let them know that there are people in this industry still making money. There are people who are still working in real estate. And I think it's important to understand that the players who have gone through market cycles are the ones who are prepared for this moment. And for the people who haven't gone through a market cycle, which is usually 7 to 10 years, you know, you wouldn't know this, but real estate comes in massive cycles. And we are unfortunately feeling the downside of a cycle. And I think a lot of people forgot about what it looks like to have exposure in a down market and not just a forever up market. So there are people pivoting. And, you know, essentially what's happening is we saw the pivot early on. So we saw the pivot in the start of really COVID, the end of COVID, where affordability became a problem first. You know, people started transitioning out of regular retail residential purchases and moved into multifamily real estate. Now, that you would have saw a massive push into multifamily real estate, where people started just getting into the smaller mid-sized multifamilies, 5 to 15 units, and out of the residential because of qualification power. Just, you couldn't qualify with the income to be able to support the massive asset values that we had. Now, things have kind of flipped. Asset values are slightly going down, but now it's really hard to qualify for a mortgage. The rates that you're qualifying for on the residential side are almost impossible. You're looking at 8%+ rates. So, you know, people are still moving into that multifamily space, but the challenge with it is that rules are changing as well. Like the Canadian government and CMHC are changing the way in which they're allowing people to get to execute on certain multifamily strategies, which is making it a little bit more difficult. So what we're seeing now and what we're hearing from the federal government is, you know, develop, build. You know, we're in a situation right now where we have massive demand for housing, but the affordability just isn't there. So like, how do we fix a problem where we don't have any inventory, we don't have any developers who are actually looking to build because it's not profitable? What are people doing? And most people, what they're doing is they're still acquiring mid-sized multifamily assets, but they're pivoting into development. CMHC has some phenomenal programs for their mid-sized stuff. So anything above like $8 to $10 million in construction, guys are looking at those opportunities now because they're making sense. They're changing their floor plans to smaller units with luxury finishes. And we're looking at decent areas, higher cost per square foot, but they're able to get more people in the properties, and those numbers are making sense in the back end. Now, unfortunately, it's all federal money. It's all CMHC money that's making this work at the moment because it's at such a discounted rate. But when you're looking to make a development, for-profit developments, and selling out these projects that aren't getting any pre-sales just isn't happening anymore. So developers are looking to change and pivot to purpose-built rentals to hold these assets long term. And unfortunately, I think that's where things are going to be going. Is it's going to be you're going to see less inventory hit the market for people who can buy, and you're going to start seeing more people and mid-sized developers hold on to these assets long term, try to refinance once it's done, pull out the majority of their capital, and sit there and wait. Because if you don't have any inventory hitting the market, rent's going to continue to increase, which is going to then increase the value of multifamily property. And it's going to become a cyclical thing until the federal government decides to step in, which personally, I don't have faith in their ability to be able to create housing, considering I think CMHC built 8 houses last year with their program. So I think that's where we're seeing a lot of development.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, you know, that's the thing. In order for them to make it work, they're holding on. And I personally know a developer that had a project in 2022, and the numbers were great. He bought before the interest rates were starting to come down, or go up, rather. And then all of a sudden, his plan to sell didn't work anymore. And now he's forced to have to restructure the whole way, like his plan, in order to make the deal work and actually not lose money. And he's going to be hanging on to it, which that was never part of the deal. And so by hanging on to it, and then once there's a few turnovers and the rents start going up, because they will, you're right, with the lack of supply, the rents will continue to grow because there's going to be more pressure on the demand on the units that are existing. But there's a lot of developers who have just packed up and gone home, and they're not developing. And so there's a lot of units that were slated to be developed that are no longer getting developed. And so what do you think, other than holding on to their units before they sell, and maybe the plan is a 5-7 year exit strategy as opposed to once it's built, sell it. What other strategies do you see people are doing? Because cost of money is really high right now, and that's also impacting the ability to make a deal work.
We're seeing people execute on strategies where cost of money isn't necessarily a challenge. So distressed properties are not something that is new, and especially in this market, we're seeing a lot of distressed properties, projects that are half finished, projects that people are selling because unfortunately they can't afford the mortgages. You know, flippers are starting to get back into the market. People who are finding opportunity in a market where the cost of capital was always high, where you need 12% capital and borrowing money to get into a project that's half done was always a thing. So you aren't necessarily changing the capital that you're using to be able to do these projects. The ones with all the money right now who have dry powder on the side are the ones who are making money in this market. If you have the ability to be able to purchase something and then sell it within the band where people are buying, you know, that $600,000 to $800,000 range is still affordable for two young professionals who are looking to get into their first home. And every good realtor is advising, you know, you make money on the buy. So if you have the ability to qualify right now, it's not a bad time to buy a home. You date the rate, you buy, you make your money on the buy. So, you know, we're seeing that the flippers who were looking to buy previously in COVID are getting back into the market, and they're finding opportunities that weren't necessarily there. If you are looking to get into the market just as like your first foray into quote unquote investing, this is not a bad time. And you know, everybody will be like, oh, you know, that's just a realtor thing. Like they're just saying that to buy a house. Like that's not the case. Like you can't have both sides of the coin. You can't complain about putting 1 million offers in and getting bid out on every single deal, and then when there's no offers, you know, all rates are too high, I can't buy a house. Like you're never gonna have the perfect market to do it. So if you can qualify, we're seeing first time investors also get into the market. Maybe buying a duplex or a triplex, an owner-occupied building, something that needs a little bit of love. That's happening a lot right now. Just allowing them to be able to service the debt with the other rental coming into the property. Like, there's always an opportune time, or there's always an opportunity in a market, and we're starting to see the first time investors look at their home purchase now as an investment instead of necessarily a home, because the thought of owning a home now without having an income producing aspect to it, it's kind of dying. It's just the cost of capital is too high and most people can't afford it.
Yeah. And that takes us back to house hacking. I mean, I did this in 2004, and before it was called house hacking, you know, and that was my first property. And I think going back to that is really like with the access to money being so easy in the last decade up until recently, and people being able to buy relatively easy, I think now they have to go back to the basics and say, okay, look, it's not easy anymore. So what can we do creatively in order to make it work? And putting a basement unit or an ADU in the laneway, if you have like in your backyard, if you have laneway access, or, you know, putting, making the second floor of your two-story house into a unit, like those are creative ways in order to make it work, in order for you to be able to have that home and have income and take care, because mortgages are high. Like the mortgage payments, I can't even imagine somebody in their 20s needing to buy a home or wanting to buy a home and having a mortgage payment that's, you know, 4,000 plus a month. That's like insane to me. It's not easy getting a home. So I like what you were saying too about kind of looking at distressed properties, and flippers are coming back. And I think it's a great strategy that people are overlooking too. But the key is you have to do it fast, because the cost of holding is very expensive.
You have to know your market, and you have to do it fast. So like, if you are an experienced flipper, this is a great time for you. If you're inexperienced, I might have a little bit more caution. Because you need a realtor to really give you boots on the ground idea of, you know, how fast can this move, what is moving in the area, what type of properties are moving, who's buying, how fast is it moving. If you know that bungalows between the $600,000 and $800,000 range in a certain city are moving, you don't want to do a flip and try to sell it for $1 million, because it's not going to work. You have to really focus on not over renovating these properties and just trying to create inventory for the specific location that you're looking to sell. And if you're dialed in and you understand exactly, you know, the product that needs to be created, there's people still making, you know, $70,000, $150,000 per deal, and they're doing it pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think speed of implementation is a big thing. And the other thing which you mentioned, I had wrote it down, was about not over renovating. You know, because at the end of the day, that is the number one thing. I flipped for a long time, as you know, and even myself, I had to go through this, because your pride is like, well, I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to make it great. But if it's going to be a rental, at the end of the day, you don't need to over renovate. You just need to make it look better or comparable to what's on the market. And you just need to have it done to a point where an appraiser is going to appraise it to where you need it to be as well, right? So again, having creative ways, having a contractor that understands this and they know how they can make it at a cost efficient and fast, where speed is going to be an issue. People who over renovate don't realize they're also adding more time to their timeline. And, and that's a big thing. They go hand in hand. So that just comes right off the bottom line for you. But yeah, I think that's also another great strategy for people to get into, is kind of going back to basics and flipping, or looking at maximizing an existing property and adding an additional unit or two if you can, especially with the new rules. So are you seeing a lot of people doing that now with the new rules here in Ontario, where it's a little bit more open and the municipalities are more lenient to get into it, you know, take an existing property and make it into a tri or even a quad?
Increased densification is becoming a very popular investment strategy, especially with all the different municipalities coming in with different rules about what you can do and can't do. The guys who are the people who own regular homes are looking a little bit more closely into creating that laneway house or that ADU, using your HELOC, or using some sort of access to capital to build it and then restructuring the debt. Most people are looking at ways to do this to offset costs, or if you do have a rental, finding a way to be able to increase that rental income. A lot of developers are looking at the 10 unit and below requirements. So if you have a specific zoning in a certain city that allows for up to 10 units, and you don't have to rezone, you now don't have to go through site plan on anything under 10 units. So I have a lot of clients right now who are cherry picking certain cities with very specific zoning, so they don't have to go through the zoning process, and they will then cut off the back of a house and add 8 units on the back and 2 units in the front, and then build 10 units within 12 months instead of having to go through the process and waiting for site plan. So the increased densification, I think, is here to stay. Developers are finding quick, easy ways to be able to build these structures. And I think it's going to do exactly what the government wants it to do with increasing density in regular residential areas. But we're seeing people catch on. It's definitely different than what you used to do, where you just demolish the house, and most people are trying to use the pre-existing structures as some sort of addition to build off of it. It's just quicker and easier to do, and most municipalities like it. But yeah, we're seeing a lot of people look at increased densification as a way to maximize the overall efficiency of their projects.
Yeah, and I'm loving, like, we're talking more and more about that now, where I recently had a podcast and we talked about that. Look at your existing portfolio rather than trying to take a pause or completely change your strategy or your market. Maybe look at what you have and maximize what you have. And there's a lot of great opportunities when you actually look internal. I think a lot of times, like, we're just looking at the next deal and the next deal and the next deal because all these properties have been stabilized, but maybe there's opportunities there. And so I'm really pushing for people to start looking at their portfolios and see what can you do within your portfolio for now, instead of sitting and holding and doing nothing, right?
And there's an entire generation of people, like the millennials and the Gen Zs, who are okay with living in these smaller units. We, as like maybe like the generation before me, was very used to having the big house and being okay with it all. But things are changing, and the idea of homes are changing. So putting that ADU in the back of your laneway, someone will pay, depending where you're staying, like $2,500 to like $4,000 if you're downtown Toronto. So there's massive amounts of income that you can be producing on your property by creating these. Now, granted, I've seen some $300,000 laneway houses that are done up better than most condos. So there are levels to it, but the way in which people are looking or changing the way they live now, like, people don't need the big houses. And I don't think Canadians are going to continue to become accustomed to living in these massive places. 2,000 square foot homes are a luxury. And I think that as the cost of living continues to increase, these smaller units are going to become the norm for the majority of Canadians who are looking to rent.
Well, and there's this whole movement of minimalism, right? Where people are starting to live as minimalists because we just have such cluttered lives now that less is more, and people are really embracing that. So, when you have less, you need less space as well. And so that just makes it easier to live. And people just, honestly, and I subscribe to this, I would much rather spend my time with the people around me and have quality time rather than cleaning a 3,000 square foot house, which is a lot of work to maintain. So,
I think I saw a heat map of the boomer, of like the baby boomer generation, and like their 3,000 square foot house, they're in 3 rooms like 90% of the time. Like, they don't use the whole home.
I think I saw that too. Like, where you spend most of your time is like the kitchen, the bathroom, your bed. Like, that's where you really live. Like, if you take the bed out when you're not sleeping, it's like the kitchen, the bathroom. Like, those, that's where you're most of your time, right? And we're on the go all the time. And so all that extra space, all it does is just collect stuff that we need to clean and maintain, and it just clutters our lives. So no, there's definitely a minimalist movement out there, and these smaller ADUs are really sought after. And if you put an ADU in your backyard way and it's your principal residence, and you could even not just rent it out as a straight rental, but if you did a short-term rental and you ended up doing Airbnb or Vrbo or whatever, you could really pump up the income that you're getting in order to afford the things that you want to do, right? Which I think is amazing. I think it's absolutely amazing. Okay, so talking about being able to do this stuff, it takes money to do this stuff. So, and you're in the mortgage industry, things have changed a lot. And we've also needed to pivot on how we're qualifying and getting access to capital, because right now it's been, all of the lenders are very tight and they're very selective over who they want to lend their money to. And so what do you see people doing in order to pivot, in order to give the lenders what they're looking for when it comes to meeting their criteria?
Sure. I mean, so I primarily my book of business is commercial business. So I help people purchase multifamily and develop them. And as a testament to what you just said, it is becoming more challenging and they're looking for overall strength of borrower. And what we're seeing is borrowers come together and do it together. You don't have to do this alone. You know, maybe you were able to do it alone at the start and when money was free, but maybe your net worth isn't quite there anymore, or you have more stuck into a project that you can't get out now, and you don't have the liquidity requirements to show a lender that you can actually do this project. We're seeing competent high-level investors come together in maybe groups of two or three who are executing at a high level on these strategies. These projects take more capital than you thought, they take longer than you thought, and the banks are pricing that in now. So as investors get pushed out of retail investing and into, you know, multifamily investing, these asset values aren't necessarily being reduced as much as you're seeing on the residential side. I think obviously that's a testament to the net operating income and how much rent has gone up. So we're seeing people just get together and execute at a high level together. So if you need net worth, if you need capital, people are doing it in groups, and they're able to do it faster. They're able to use each person's expertise. So I personally execute on this strategy. I have two other partners that I invest in multifamily with. One of them owns a real estate brokerage. One of them owns a construction company, and then I own the brokerage. So we all have a part to play in closing on these apartment buildings. And it seems to work because, you know, you all have your expertise and you can all either shave costs or find ways to be able to do things creatively. And we're seeing more of that happening in the space right now.
Yeah. And I think there's I knew this to be true when I was investing in multifamily. And what happens is when you bring people together who have different strengths, and then the bank looks at that as a group, as a collective, they're actually now, and maybe you can tell me if this is true or not, but from what I've found was that if you're going in by yourself, it is a lot harder because they know that if something happens to you that you're unable to perform what you say you're going to do, then there's nobody else to kind of pick up the slack. And so that's a high risk for them that they no longer want to take. And so they're really focused on these groups of investors where the responsibility is shared. And if one person isn't performing or gets sick or whatnot, especially after COVID, you know, COVID happened and then people are getting sick, and then business has to continue. And so they're kind of moving away from those single investors and really giving more weight to the applications that have multiple investors, where there's a group of investors where the responsibility is shared, essentially.
Yeah, strength is in the numbers. And right now it's all about cash. How much liquidity is king, and how much cash do you have to execute? Like, it's great that you can go get a loan to do your renovations, but other than the down payment, your carrying costs, do you have money for incidentals? Do you have money to take care of, you know, this boiler that's going to cost you $50,000 to change out? Like, can you actually execute on this? I mean, it's great when cap rates are shrinking and values are going through the roof year over year, and you're just making money. But in a market like this, where you have to actually spend money to make money, do you have the ability to actually do it, and can you execute effectively? So a testament to what you just said, yeah, you're definitely stronger together. And if you have a bunch of professionals who have portfolios, who have a track record of executing at a high level, it's a lot easier to get a deal done. And these opportunities in the multifamily space are coming up because people can't execute. You know, people are leaving properties that are half vacant. You know, the opportunity right now to get a building and to get one in a good area, it's never been better because there's not very many people out there actually taking it seriously and executing at a high level. So, we're finding that the opportunities in the multifamily space in good areas. I personally invest in Kitchener, but Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, Hamilton, there's a lot of buildings out there right now that for the right investors, I think you put yourself in a good spot where when rates do come down, you're going to be able to access a lot of that cash.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the other thing too. People are holding off buying. They don't want to buy right now because they're like, oh, there's no good deals right now. Or the numbers, it's just breaking even. But ultimately the rates aren't going to stay high forever. And in my opinion, I think going out there and buying now, and then once the rates start dropping to what you're saying, ultimately that's just going to be cash flow increase on your bottom line. And that's just going to be putting you in a better position as far as your net worth, as far as your cash flow, because the value of the property is going to go up as well when the rates start going down. So, you know, especially when it's multifamily and it's value of the property is attached to the NOI, right? And they people
I hear clients tell me this all the time about like, oh, I don't want to buy now. Like, when are you going to buy then? Like, this is the time to buy. If you have dry powder on the side, all of our high net worth clients restructured debt last year to buy in this market. Now, the experienced people are buying in this market, and they are looking to take, you know, properties that are underperforming. So if you're sitting on the sidelines, being like, I don't want to buy in this market, what are you going to buy in a market that's overinflated? Like, I think there's opportunity. And unfortunately, when there's blood in the water, the people who, the sharks who know when to purchase real estate. And I don't want to say that in a predatory way, but there's people who understand cycles, and there's people who have money on the sidelines looking to purchase in a market and make money. You know, we all do this to increase our net worth, to help our families. And there are opportune times to buy, and this is one of those times.
Yeah. And that's what Warren Buffett says: when people are selling, it's time to buy. Right. And that's what's happening right now. So, I think the one thing that I also want to highlight is with your brokerage, and right now we're in a contracting economy. It's fascinating to me that some businesses are thriving like yours. There's a lot of, you know, over 2022 and over 2023 where real estate brokerages and mortgage brokerages, they're, you know, trimming the fat, they're sending people home. You know, there's a fraction of the deals is what it was during COVID, and they're really contracting as well in order to survive. But you're growing. You've got a new office, you've got more people, so you need more space. And that to me is a testament as to what you guys are doing. And also one of the things is everybody in your office are investors themselves. And I preach, Josh, I preach to people like, find investor-friendly professionals. You need investor-friendly professionals. They need to understand your business model in order to deliver what you need. The majority of mortgage brokers out there are retail mortgage brokers for first-time home buyers or repeat home buyers that are not investors, and they just don't get us. And so I really want to highlight that for people who are listening. If they're looking for a mortgage broker who's investor-friendly, tell me a little bit more about why you think you guys are growing in this contracting economy.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, it all comes down to the people who work with me. I'm a little bit biased, but I have the absolute best team in the world. I had the opportunity to start building my team a few years ago, and I've done it very selectively. As you said, each one of them invests in real estate themselves, so they understand the pains and the stresses and the woes of going through the process of purchasing real estate, and they know the emotions along with it. You know, one of the advantages of my guys, my brokerage specifically, is just like, you know, we build relationships first, and I think that's kind of a testament as to why we've grown is, you know, the relationships that we build allow us to continue to help our investors navigate the market. An investor will always transact. They will refinance in an up market, they'll refinance in a down market and start buying. And there's always a way to be able to allocate capital in a certain way to either acquire or stabilize an asset. So, you know, we come from an advisory approach. You know, it's more than just doing a transaction. You know, we help our clients through the good times, the bad times. And we are experts in hard deals, and we did hard deals when there was a lot of easy deals, and you know, now there's only hard deals. And I think that's a testament as to why we're so busy right now, is we're helping investors navigate hard situations and to get through the next, you know, let's say 12 more months. We are part-time therapists, it feels like sometimes. So we wear all the hats, but you're really proud of all my guys as well who are out there servicing the investor communities. You know, they are absolute rock stars, and we come from a people first approach. You know, none of us are here to do a deal. We're all here to help, and that's why we're growing. Bigger office, you know, more people. I hire based off people. I've never asked for a copy of a degree. I've never asked for, you know, what are your credentials? I hire based off of your ability to be able to continue to, you know, have a good heart and to be capable to learn. So, you know, all the people who work for me, you know, they're really good people at heart. And then we teach them how to do what they do every single day, which is, you know, why we have such a great place to work.
I love that. And you know what I tell people all the time, especially when it comes to partnerships too, like people ask me, how is it that you hire? How do you find the people? And it's always people first, skills after, because skills can be taught, right? And so they just have to have the same energy, be in alignment with your beliefs and your, like, ultimately your belief system and how you want to treat people. And the fact that you're saying you're not transactional, you're more relational, which is a huge testament to why your business also is going to function better. I mean, this is one thing that you also talk about that we haven't touched on is businesses and building businesses and systems and whatnot. We're out of time, but I do want to ask you one question. Let's say, because you've built a successful business and there's business owners that listen to the podcast, what is the one thing that you would say has contributed, been one of the major contributors to the success of your business?
The people that I work with me. They don't work for me. You know, we move together in a united front as, you know, a team. And like, you know, I've been a part of a lot of brokerages before where you're part of a team, you pay your desk fee, you do your compliance and that's it. But we truly work together to support each other. There isn't any animosity towards people doing deals and getting and it having success. You know, it is extremely competitive, but you know, we work together and we push each other forward and we support each other as brothers or sisters. And you know, that is kind of the key factor as to why we're able to navigate a market and why we're able to be successful is because we all support each other. It's not one person moving forward. It's 22 people moving forward together. With any questions, any issues, any challenges, our network, our relationships, our lenders. So really it's family essentially at the end of the day, like we support each other.
And I think that's also why you're able to like better service your clients and why they keep coming back is because when there's a problem, then you just tap into the collective and there's power in that collective. It's like, hey, I've got this issue and somebody's got an answer in that room. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, more minds are better than one, right? Wow. Well, that's a lot. We covered a lot today, Josh. I am super stoked and excited. Thank you so much for sharing all of the bombs that you did and giving some insight both on business and capital and different strategies right now that are working out there for people. Is there any final thoughts or words of wisdom that you wanted to share with the audience before we wrap it up?
Yeah, right now is temporary. If you guys are going through something that's difficult, you know, it's a lot of people who are going through what you're going through right now. There are services out there to help you. It's not some hopeless, endless pit of high interest rates forever. We are in a cycle and this is how things go. So if you do need to speak to somebody, I recommend speaking to any mortgage professional who can give you some solid advice. Don't make irrational decisions. It was hard enough to buy your real estate. You know, don't make a rash decision to sell it if there is another solution out there to be able to hold it if that's the solution. So, you know, surround yourself with people who know what they're doing and who advise at a high level, and you'll get through this. This isn't a forever situation. This is a right now situation.
Love that. This isn't a forever situation. This is a right now situation. I love that. Well, Josh, it was a pleasure having you on the show. It was a pleasure as always to see you. And I can't wait to see where you're going, like with the growth that you're having and everything. Like, you know, you've been in business a number of years, but still relatively, you know, hasn't been that long. You're not decades in and you're just moving and shaking the world. So can't wait to see once you've got 20 years under your belt, where you're going to be. So I appreciate you taking the time coming and sharing. And yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
If anybody wanted to reach out to you and find out how they can work with you or just find out more and connect with you, what's the best way for them?
Perfect. Yeah, my contact information, I'm assuming, will be down below. You can reach out to me on Instagram, JFinns on Instagram. I work 27 hours a day, so email, text message, phone call, Instagram. You can get a hold of me many different ways. Just feel free to reach out. The bat phone will ring and I'll answer it.
Bat phone. Love that. Yep. So we'll have all of that stuff in the show notes. So you can find it in the show notes down below and reach out to Joss if you have any questions when it comes to financing or investing. If you need any help restructuring capital and your finances, he's there to help. So him and his team are solid, and totally get the investing world. So with that, this is Danielle Chason signing off with the Let's Get Real Estate podcast, where I bring to you real people doing real estate. Bye for now.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast, and congratulations on improving your education real estate.
Please leave a review only if you felt we provided value, as it would really help us if you would leave a 5-star review so that we can help reach a broader audience.
And don't forget to comment what you enjoyed and tell us what you are looking to learn more about.
As always, thanks for your support, and we'll see you on the next episode.